And the inking of the body in a digital world. We'll meet three local tattoo artists to talk about their craft, but I want to start with a little history. Chris Rainier is a documentary photographer and a National Geographic Society fellow and director of the Last Mile Technology Program. He's highly respected for his work on preserving endangered cultures and languages around the globe and has spent 7 or 8 years documenting through photography a wide variety of cultures that apply tattoos and other markings to their bodies. A former student and assistant to Ansel Adams and journalist at large for NPR, Chris Rainier joins us for the first part of this program by phone. Welcome to the program and thank you for doing it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
As we go through this conversation, we have on our website at wfae.org/charlottetalks a short slideshow of some of Chris Rainier's work so you can see what we're talking about as we talk about some of these indigenous and native cultures that he has photographed down through the years. In the introduction to a conversation you had with NPR's Alex Chadwick on a show called Day to Day about your book on all of this, Ancient Marks, Alex asserted that traditional cultures worldwide are experiencing a renaissance in body markings, which they see as meaning-laden paths to empowerment that honor both the individual and the community. Why? Why is this resurgence or this renaissance happening now?
That's a very good question. I think here in the beginning of the 21st century, we're seeing a renaissance of traditional cultures around the world. I think they've been pushed to the edge. Many assimilated into modernity, but in these pockets in Africa and the Pacific, Asia, China, throughout South America, there are these cultures still hidden in the forest, so to speak, that are desperately trying to hang on to their traditional ways of life. And there's a renaissance going on. I think the last of the elders are saying, come on, younger generation, if you don't take the mantle now and run with this, our culture will be gone forever. Our language will be gone forever, our traditions. And in almost every one of these traditional cultures, the act of initiation, that ritual of becoming a man or even a woman within the traditional society is done through the marking of the body, whether it's tattooing in the Pacific region, in Polynesian cultures, or even in Africa where the skin is too dark, it's scarification, some sort of marking that indicates a ritual of childhood into adulthood. So there's this tremendous renaissance going on around the world. It's actually, for us sort of documenters of traditional cultures, it's quite exciting to see.
And do you see a connection between the renaissance in these tribal cultures and what is happening in our own culture where tattooing has moved into the mainstream?
I do. And when I did this project called Ancient Marks, which ended up in a book and an exhibit that still travels, I think I really did hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of interviews, both with traditional societies and contemporary movements of tattooing. And there's this basic human need to be acknowledged, to be recognized, to belong to a group. And I think as religion as a formal entity has kind of shifted around in our society and broken up and gone in many different directions, many young people are looking for a new religion, a new identity, a new belief system. And I think one of the ways of visually affirming that they belong to a community, belong to a group, belong to a small little group of friends, is to have this marking on their body that says, this is what I am. This is who I am. So whether it's the Maori in New Zealand with their traditional moka or young adults in a community in North Carolina or Tennessee or New York or Wyoming, kids, adults identify with belonging to a group.
So in a way, are we in modern, in Western culture, reverting to what these tribal cultures have always done in terms of our use of body markings, using it in the same way?
And it may sound like a stretch for many people when they look at the tattooing they see today in contemporary culture, but on a deep kind of primordial, human psychological level, I think it is. It's the desire to belong to a community, belong to a tribe, belong to something that is significant within a society that is sort of, many of the traditional structures are breaking down and new ones are being formed. Hmm.
When these indigenous cultures use body marking, be it scarification or piercings or tattooing, is it uniform as a rite of passage? Does it become uniform? Does everybody who gets these tattoos get the same tattoo or very similar tattoos, or are they individually marked in some way?
Well, I think what begins to happen, and it's very interesting, and there's a sort of subplot here that a lot of contemporary tattooing is appropriated from traditions, whether it's the Celtic, or there's what's called the whole modern primitive movement that started out of San Francisco and has been sort of amplified across the country by festivals like Burning Man, et cetera, that there's often an appropriation of a tradition from a older ancient culture. So there's a lot of, if you were to use the word mashing, there's a lot of mashing up. But what I find is that once a group begins to kind of form and collectively come around an idea, there's a lot of tradition that's built within that. So whether it's a biking community or the gangs that I photographed in East LA, the Latino gangs, or gangs that are contemporary kid gangs, if you want, or even the modern primitive movement, there are traditions and protocol and rituals that begin to form rather rapidly, and then it's sort of a copycat, this is the ritual you find. And within traditional societies, a lot of the patterns are very strict, and they can't wander too far from that as an artist and get too creative or too much difference between the tattoos within that community.
We're talking to Chris Rainier, who's a documentary photographer and a National Geographic fellow, and he's written, he has a book of a collection of the photographs that he's taken of these cultures around the world who mark themselves for various different reasons. And some of those pictures are on our website right now at wfae.org/charlottetalks. You can also go to his website and see them. You've had access to a wide variety of these cultures. You just mentioned the gangs in L.A., which I guess is an indigenous culture. I don't know. But you also talked to the Japanese mafia, and they gave you unprecedented access to people within their organization and the markings that they have on their body to identify themselves. And then you go into these other cultures that are way off in the jungles someplace. And I'm just curious how you get access to these people and why they let you photograph them.
Good question. It takes time. And let's use the Yakuza, the Japanese mafia, as a good example, or the Maoris in New Zealand. It took me 5 years to gain permission. Many of these projects that I do, Ancient Marks, this tattooing one, took almost 10 years. And I'm in for the long haul. You need to make contact. You need to build respect within the community. You need to ensure that your contacts understand what you're doing. So coming into this tattoo project, I knew I wanted the Maori community in New Zealand, which are highly resistant to outsiders, to Westerners, to Europeans coming in and documenting their culture. Certainly the Yakuza in Japan are very secretive. No one gets access to them. So it was very much sleuth work, detective work. And as a journalist, as a trained journalist, as a photographer for National Geographic, you know that you have to do your due diligence. You know you have to do your homework, and you have to get it right, and you have to be authentic. Mm. So in both communities, the Maori and the Yakuza, I met with a leader of the community, gave them books that I had done on prior projects, and really said, I'm not here to trivialize. I'm not here to perpetuate the myth that you are kind of a freak, unusual part of society. But this is very much an authentic tradition that I respect and I would like to document.
And you're helping them, to preserve their own cultures.
Absolutely. And hopefully resonates. And I continue to do projects today where I'm trying to break into often very secretive unusual traditions of cultures around the world. So it's a slow process, but it's building up a level of trust and authenticity. And eventually they were very kind and let me in. And then it's how I deal with the work afterwards and putting it into a context where people understand the connection between, you know, marking the body and why we do it.
You say that in many of these cultures, they see the body as a canvas that is not complete until
Correct.
It has been marked. Now, in Western culture, there are religions that don't that prohibit body markings, that because the body is the temple of the soul, and you're not supposed to damage it or change it in any way. Why the difference?
It's interesting. If you go back to early Christianity and go back to early examples of most of our formal religions around the world, tattooing was prevalent. So in the Celtic culture, in the Middle East, the Judaic culture, the Christian culture, there was tattooing very prevalent.
Well, you have a picture in your book of this woman who I'm assuming is in the Middle East because she appears to be in full hijab.
Yeah.
And I think it might be Egypt. And you have a photograph of both the front of her hands and the palms of her hands, and they're completely tattooed.
They're actually tattooed with a form of henna, which is not permanent,
okay.
But it certainly is a form of marking the body. And so it's very, in that specific example, very prevalent throughout the Islamic culture as well as the Asian Indian culture and many different variations in Bangladesh and that area. But yeah, it's interesting because it was in fact modern Christianity that really forbade the tattooing of the body, and that's how a lot of it got stamped out in South America, throughout the Pacific region, and in many areas of part of the world. And here's an interesting story. When Captain Cook and his sailors went to Polynesia in the 16th, 17th century, they got what was called tatad, which is the Polynesian word for the tapping of the ink into the skin. So they were tatad. They took that back to England, bastardized the word to tattoo, and that is how tattooing got reintroduced into modern European culture. Because, again, the Celts and earlier societies had it, and it evolved out. And then that is how it's kind of gotten this bad association, just sort of fringe culture. Certainly within the sort of sailing merchant marine world. So interesting how it got reintroduced, and the word tattoo is actually based from the Polynesian word tata, T-A-T-A-U.
I have less than a minute left. You've photographed so many people in so many different cultures. Does a particular style of artwork, body artwork, strike you as being more stunning or more unusual or more intricate than others?
I would say the Polynesian. The Polynesians look at contemporary Western culture and are a little mystified because they believe the body is the base for the sculpture, a base for the tattoo, that it should be one whole complete piece to enhance the beauty of the body. And I love the Polynesian tattooing.
Okay. Chris Rainier is a documentary photographer, a National Geographic Fellow, and the author of Ancient Marks, where you can see many of the photographs that he's taken around the world of societies that mark the body in some way, and some of them can be seen on our website right now at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it very much. We're coming right back.
Good morning, it's 9:20. You're tuned into Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Queen City Audio, Video, and Appliances, local purveyors of premium appliances since 1952, including KitchenAid. More information about KitchenAid's new look at queencityonline.com. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, on the surface, the United States has a two-party system of government, but there's no law about that. Democrats and Republicans don't have to be the only parties, and there are others, the largest of which is the Libertarian Party. David Bowes of the Cato Institute wrote his book, The Libertarian Mind, as an effort to explore not only the growing interest in the party, but also their core beliefs. He joins us to talk about all of this, The Libertarian Mind, when Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, The military suicide rate has jumped dramatically in recent years. One family who lost a son to combat in Iraq and another to suicide is trying to change that. Efforts to transform the military's approach to mental illness.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. To talk about tattoos in today's modern American culture, today's modern Charlotte culture, and to bring the whole topic home to Charlotte, we've invited three local tattoo artists to join us for the remainder of the program. Troy Johnson has been working as a tattoo artist in various parts of the state for nearly 15 years. Like many other artists, he just wanted to get a tattoo and got his first one at the age of 18 and eventually became a professional artist. Today he is owner of Green Light Tattoo, that's just outside of South End on South Boulevard. Good morning.
Good morning.
Harley Lakeman turned her childhood passion for coloring into a profession. In fact, after going to her first tattoo convention as a teenager, she realized this was the way she really could have a career in art. She is an artist at Foo's Custom Tattoos in Noda. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And by the way, one of our producers, Alexia Girodi, recently spoke with someone while they were getting a tattoo from Haley, and you can hear some of that conversation on our website, wfae.org/charlottetalks. Chris Stewart has worked for 17 years to refine a style that he describes as less is more, and attempting to take traditional Americana tattooing and add his personal touch to it. An artist since he could hold a pencil, he now works in ink at Ace Custom Tattoo in Plaza Midwood, and also at Captured Tattoo in Tustin, California. That's the shop on the TV show L.A. Inc. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
As I was reading all of your bios yesterday, it turns out that all of you got interested in this when you were in your teenage years, I think. Why did that interest present itself when you were a teenager? I don't know who to ask that question. Just all of you take a stab at it.
I'm guessing the rebellion of it.
The rebellion of it.
I saw how art could affect our lives personally and then even in society as a creative outlet to show who we are without even having to explain it to people.
I would agree originally with Troy, like the rebellion. I was a young skater and my uncle was a skateboarder, not much older than me, and him and all of his friends were covered in tattoos, and I was extremely attracted to it.
Our previous guest mentioned that in these cultures, people use tattoos to say, this is who I am. And you just said that, essentially, Haley.
Yes.
As I look at you, and you're sitting here in a short sleeve shirt, your arms are tattooed, your hands are tattooed, your neck is tattooed. That's what I can see. So what are your tattoos telling me about you?
My tattoos have been an evolutionary process of growth. As I started in areas of my body that you couldn't see at first, and I loved.
Is that because you were just trying it on for size, and you didn't want people to see because you hadn't decided whether this is the way I want to go yet?
Not necessarily. I actually picked an area of the body that I just thought would be beautiful on my stomach, and it's grown from there. You know, I wasn't sure at first that I wanted to get a sleeve even until I saw a particular artist at a tattoo convention that really spoke to me, that his style was a way to represent kind of my internal style and ideas. So everything has grown from larger conceptions of my belief systems to just ideas that I've had to the way universe speaks to me.
I just noticed that you're also wearing a graphic t-shirt. You're wearing what I think is a Batman t-shirt.
It
says
is.
Boom, bam.
Bam.
From the TV show Batman. So get back to my original question, because I don't think you answered it. What does it say about you? What do your tattoos say about you? What are you communicating to me?
So I'm communicating my interest in the cosmos, in spirituality, and flow, and movement, and color blending. I really wanted all of my pieces to accentuate my own body, and instead of seeing individual marks, I wanted my entire arm to be a painting, you know, my entire leg to eventually end up being this evolving storyline type painting on my body.
Are all of you on this page? Is that why you do it? Because you want somebody to know who you are, what you're all about, and these tattoos speak about who you are, what you feel, what you think?
To some degree. it's become, the more I travel the world now, I just kind of collect pieces from different tattooers around the world.
How do you choose these people? Because this is a lasting work of art on it you is. That you're carrying around with you 24/7.
It is. I mean, definitely, you know, becoming a part of the community such abroad, I meet people, and I definitely look at portfolios online at conventions. That is the key to choosing a tattooer. But most importantly, I want to be tattooed someone that is a good person. You know, I want to have a relationship with that person and be respectful. And I've been tattooed by people that, you know, pretends to be super tough and just is ready to get the tattoo done and over. And I don't like that. I would rather have a less attractive tattoo by a phenomenal person and have a good story behind it than the most beautiful tattoo ever.
It is a powerful relationship from artist to tattoo.
Absolutely.
Why?
You're giving them a part of you. You're giving them your time. It's going to be on them forever. I don't consider it their tattoo until I'm done with it. So I have to agree with the tattoo also. I don't do anything that goes against what I believe or what I think will work for that person.
You know, this is art, and most people who buy art buy a picture for the wall. And they'll walk through a gallery that's selling art, and they'll, I like that, or I don't like that. But they'll find themselves really pulled towards something that they do like, and if they can afford it, perhaps buy it. It strikes me that this is not something that they can audition. I mean, this this is being done. They've already bought it before it's even before the first piece of ink goes in.
True.
Well, we go through a consultation process where I especially like to try and pull out what that individual has inside them. Sometimes they don't even know exactly what they're looking for or how to represent that. It's all of our personal styles, you know, that they're looking for us to convey what they want in our way.
And people definitely should interview the artist and check out their work and make sure it's the style they like, not just because it's a reputable shop or a bad shop. Make sure that artist is going to give them exactly what they want.
All three of you came along, and you mentioned that you started out with your first tattoo because it was kind of an act of rebellion. But a lot of people today are maybe it is rebellion if you're a banker or a lawyer and you walk into a tattoo shop because you live in Myers Park. And you just want a tattoo. Is that rebellion? Is that the little piece of you saying, I'm not buttoned down 9 to 5. There's going to be something about me that is out there.
Yeah. I think everybody's looking to express themselves more fully.
Well, and it's changed a lot since I was 18 and got that first rebellion tattoo also.
True. And I think personally, a lot of people disagree, especially in the tattoo industry, with the TV shows. There's a lot of haters.
I didn't even know there were TV shows till yesterday.
And I personally, I'm super close to a lot of the people on the shows, okay. And I don't even watch them. But I think as far as community, we need to support and put great tattooers on the shows.
Well, I saw a couple of clips yesterday because I didn't know there were TV shows of some of these shows. And they're like all the other reality shows that you see on television where you have the person getting the tattoo and then you have the tattoo artist and they're seen in the act of doing it or consulting. And then that they cut away for reaction commentary from the tattoo artist. And these guys look, you know, the ones I saw looked kind of rough, but they had a sense of humor about them. And the people that they were working with were not the usual suspects that you would associate with tattoos. Is that how the industry has changed, that now it's no longer the usual suspect?
It is absolutely changed.
The motorcycle group and all that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. It used to be intimidating and scary to go into a tattoo shop, and I think that's partially what drew me to it. It was that like, all right, I'm going to the tattoo shop to get this from tough bikers, and like, it's cool. And nowadays, you don't get that. You have to be respectful and very kind to the client, and you get a higher-end client.
So is this the Disneyfication of tattooing? I mean, it's like when you used to go to New York and go to 42nd Street, it was a little vaguely dangerous. Probably wasn't, but it just felt vaguely dangerous. And now it's Disneyfied. It feels completely safe, and it probably is completely safe. Is that what's going on here? Has that taken some of the edge off of this in a good way, or do you lose some of that edge in a bad way too?
Both. It's everything. Any kind of change is good and bad.
Okay.
I think these are, you know, Chris calls them ancient marks, uh-huh. And so there's rebellion in there. There's just self-actualization in there. You know, everybody's kind of coming to the table for a different reason, and I think our culture in general has been growing more profoundly interested in art and expressing themselves personally through tattoo.
To echo what Chris just said about the changes in the environment in these tattoo shops, you say, Haley, that you fell in love with the art of tattooing from the very beginning, and you were inspired by the crowd around you, and you described them as being outstandingly friendly.
Yes, my first experience as actually a 14-year-old at a tattoo convention was that here was this potentially scary group of people who were some of the nicest strangers I had ever met. Great stories, and it was a really welcoming kind of environment for me.
Your parents took you to this tattoo convention at 14. Why did your parents do it? Were they into tattoos?
My dad had one tattoo. My mom got her first tattoo that year, and it was just interesting that it had been coming to Charlotte. Here's a tattoo convention. Let's go check it out. They were both very creative people and encouraged me to do so.
But you didn't get your first tattoo, I understand, until you were 18, is that right?
I actually did get my first tattoo underage. It was not at that convention, however.
was it you that got Stuart? Did you get your first tattoo, Chris Stewart, on your 18th birthday?
No, I was a little under, just a little bit.
So you're all lawbreakers.
So it is rebellion.
This was a long time ago, and I wouldn't recommend it for anyone.
Do you have to?
Truth be told, mine was probably a good week before I turned 18.
Do you have to be 18 to get a tattoo?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Why?
That's the legal age.
Actually, when you're 18, you still don't know yourself well enough to make that kind of permanent decision. Mine is covered, the one that I got when I was 14.
I'm almost 38 years old. I wish I would have started getting tattooed 10 years ago.
Why? Because that's when you knew who you were?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely do not regret any of the tattoos. You know,
I've had
a lot removed and covered. That's because my ideas changed, and I just wanted different things there.
And that's one of the reasons I'm not completely covered yet, is because I got really good advice from artists when I started, and that was to not hurry and get everything covered, because your tastes are going to change as you continue in the business.
Well, I was going to say something about that, because you're the biggest guy in the room, and you look like, if there is a stereotype, you look like the stereotypical guy who would get tattooed, and you have the fewest tattoos of anybody at the table here.
Yes.
Except for me.
But when I plan out my work, like Chris said earlier, you know, we have the luxury of being in the business and seeing a lot of artist work. So we know who we want to get certain pieces by in the style that we want it in.
Yeah.
So I plan it out. It takes a lot of time. My last tattoo took probably 3 or 4 months to plan out with the artist. It took 4 sessions a month apart. So it was it's a big commitment.
Did he or she, and do you, draw out these designs before you actually do them? Or do
absolutely.
You do?
Yes.
Sometimes on the skin, sometimes on paper first.
Do you mean our personal tattoos or for clients?
Well, either way.
Personally, I generally know the artist that I want to do the work, and I know their style. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll just write down a description of what I want. If anything, a basic sketch, because I want that artist's input on the work.
Yes, we're seeking the artist for their particular
style.
Now, here's something that also breaks stereotypes, because most people traditionally think of men as being people who get tattooed. A 2012 Harris poll says that for the first time, American women are more likely to be tattooed than men. Some 23% of women have tattoos. Only 19% of men do. Are you seeing this reflected in your clientele?
Oh, very much.
Women always sit better.
Yes.
What does that mean?
They're way tougher. I love when a super tough man says, I'm sitting like a girl. I always tell him, please sit like a girl. You'll sit a lot better.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll get emails about this, but the worst are military. Marines are the worst. Almost for a while there, every time I tattooed a Marine, I told him, okay, I guess I'm going to have to chase you around the room. Never fails.
Women have a higher tolerance for pain, is what
absolutely.
You're telling me.
I think it's because women aren't afraid to say, ow, that hurts a little.
Yeah.
Give me a second. Whereas a guy just kind of flexes and holds his breath and then passes out.
Man, I also think that women are more in touch with themselves in a way, you know, and kind of thinking more about their interiors and how to represent that and how to explore that type of expression in a way. And in our culture, it's definitely been growing where women are stepping out a little bit more and being more bold and powerful.
Are there differences in the kinds of tattoos that men want versus women? Are there differences in where women want their tattoos to be placed versus men?
I think it depends on the style of tattooing you're doing. Like, people seek me out for the traditional Americana tattoos, for the fancy script writing, and all of my clients, men or women, are getting that. Like, I can do a Rock of Ages full back piece on a man or a woman. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the style that, you know, the client is seeking out, and that's for all of us. You know, there's definitely tattoo shops that are just walk-ins, and you do the small walk-in tattoos. And to me, if I have time, I would love to do a small walk-in tattoo, because that client that's getting the infinity knot could be getting a back piece next year. Mm.
That's right.
Absolutely. Almost every big tattoo I've done, sleeve, back piece, anything like that, has started off with the person coming in and getting a small tattoo. So, you know, the walk-in tattoo is great.
As you talked about earlier about preserving the culture, I think your photographer did. And I think to a degree, as you approach your lifelong process of getting tattooed, we are sort of preserving our own storylines on our bodies. You know, it may start with something small like that, but it's going to grow with our own stories as we grow in life.
You know, young people have very firm skin and firm muscles supporting that skin. And as you age, your skin becomes more wrinkled and it sags and you lose muscle tone. And I'm just curious as to how you or your clients feel, or do they even consider or worry about what these things that look wonderful on them at 25 might look like when they're 80?
You know, if you've lived with it for 60 years, I think you're going to be happy with it still. You know, it's a part of you now. It's not a painting on the wall that gets melted.
I personally love an age tattoo. I was drawn to the sailors in the photographs that I saw before I was the skater kid. I saw these images that were just super bold and strong and held for years. Like, I still take photos of every classic tattoo I see nowadays on an old sailor. I cannot wait for my tattoos to look that way. I love it.
Some people have asked me, you know, well, what do you think about when you're 80? I think I'm going to look like a badass old lady.
Absolutely. And that, I think that also goes for the idea of, am I going to regret it? You know, that's a lot of people's concern on their first tattoo. You know, will I regret this? Well, I mean, it kind of marks a time period in your life.
Yes.
So I can't see regretting that.
What do most people start with? If they're walk-ins or they're just going to put their toe in the water, what do they start with? What kind of artwork? What kind of a design? How big?
I would say the classics are always around. I mean, you know, the butterfly and the flowers, and I mean, maybe just because any butterfly you do is considered a butterfly, or any flower you do is considered a flower, mm-hmm. but it's still really popular.
Lots of lettering these days for the initial walk-in. Yes.
Say it again.
To which I love.
Yes.
Because you're a calligrapher?
I love doing lettering.
All right.
Absolutely.
We're going to come back and talk to more of these artists who have set up shop in Charlotte, and a growing number of people have done this, but Chris Stewart is with us along with Haley Lakeman and Troy Johnson. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Get back to more Charlotte Talks in a moment on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. Support this morning comes from WFAE members and Honda of Concord, committed to customer service, satisfaction, and bringing excellence to the car buying experience. Offering a selection of over 700 new and pre-owned vehicles, details at hondaofconcord.com. Coming up next on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, the military suicide rate jumped more than 80% between 2002 and 2009. One military family who lost a son to suicide and another to combat in Iraq is trying to change that. A new book about one family's fight to transform the military's approach to mental illness. That's the Diane Rehm Show coming up next at 10, right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded public radio. We're 90.7 WFAE. Stay with us. We're coming right back to more Charlotte Talks.
Charlotte Squawks returns to Booth Playhouse for its 11th edition. This musical parody takes aim at everything, from pop culture to politics to traffic and sports. WFAE is hosting an invited dress rehearsal on Thursday evening, June 4th at 8. Find out how you can join us for a sneak peek at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about tattooing today with three tattoo artists in town. Haley Lakeman is an artist at Foo's Custom Tattoos. Troy Johnson, artist and owner of Greenlight Tattoo near South Boulevard. Foo's, by the way, is in Noda. And Chris Stewart is an artist at Ace Custom Tattoo and also Captured Tattoo in Tustin, California. Ace is in the Plaza Midwood area. We were just talking about age a second ago. And off the air, you mentioned, I think it was you, Chris, that said you did a tattoo on somebody who was 89 years old.
He was 89 years old.
Recently. And you did one recently on somebody who was 72. And I have an email here from, let me see here, Bill in Matthews, who said, growing up as a baby boomer in a small town in southern Indiana, my only remembrances of tattoos were in carnival sideshows or on Popeye the Sailor's arm. Now my grandson wants me to get one. I told him I would when I am 80. I want one on my chest. He should come to you, Chris. I want one on my chest that reads, "Do not resuscitate." and on my back that reads, "Turn me over."
Good one. I love it.
That's very funny. That would work.
Great. Yep. Never too late.
All three of you talked about pain a second ago. We can't talk about this without talking about pain. And you just said that guys are wusses when it comes to this, that women are much stronger at this. At how painful is it?
Depends on where you're getting it, and everyone's
I'll
different.
Bet.
Yes. It can depend on what kind of day you're having.
Yeah,
okay. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
How much rest you've had.
Well,
you know, it's irritating.
Uh-huh. Well, I wanted to ask Chris, because he deals with these indigenous cultures that don't have electric tattooing devices that you guys all use, and they probably don't have the sanitation standards that we have in the West. So what? Because I'm told that these electric devices that use can inject ink under the skin like 180 times a second.
It's extremely fast. Extremely.
So what is it like getting an inoculation? Is it like getting a shot? What is it like? What is it like?
It's hard to describe.
Yeah, it's more of a burning feeling. Yeah. You don't feel the individual pokes or anything. It's going too fast for your body to recognize that. So it just feels like one little burning feeling going along.
More like a scratch. Yeah. Sometimes a little nervy kind of sensations.
And how long does it take to heal?
About 4 weeks, really, for it to heal completely.
And what do you have to do?
To regenerate the top layer of your skin.
When you have your whole arm covered, and I guess this doesn't all happen in one day. It happens over time. But when that happens, what do you have to protect your arms or the places that you've gotten the tattoo applied for a certain amount of time? How does it work?
You definitely want to keep it clean as possible. Wash your tattoo, definitely. Mm-hmm. Less is more, I think, as far as healing is concerned. You really want to remove the excess pigment that's going to be seeping out for the first few days, and even allow it to be a little bit more dry, I think, than using a bunch of ointments.
Mm. Yeah, you can definitely overdo it.
Okay. Yes.
I want you to all talk about your individual styles, because I'm sure that each of you have your own hallmark style. And I know that you talked about, Chris, about Americana art. What does that mean in the tattoo world?
Just a nice, bold, solid line. Black shading and color, you know, it stands the test of time. You do an eagle today, 50 years from now, it's going to look like an eagle.
Mm-hmm. How and what about you?
I still do a little bit of everything. I mean, my style changes as I get interested in other styles. You know, I'll work on gray wash for a while, and I'll really start to like that. And then all of a sudden, I really want to do a lot of color pieces.
Gray wash?
The black and gray tattoos that you normally see. A lot of people call it grayscale. In the tattoo industry, call it black and gray.
And that's what I think of when I think of older tattoos, like from the 40s and the 30s, that sailors might have, that they'd all be blue inked or blue-gray inked.
Just the way it ages. Very minimal.
So you've added color to that kind of
Yeah, and there was color back then, but the color will slowly
fade,
and what you have left is the black. So you're still going to see it. That black holds strong. And I'm definitely still versatile. Like I grew up, when I started tattooing, you did what the client want. Mm-hmm. You know, so I still do portraits. I still do writing. I still do the infinity knots. I do what the client wants, the best of my ability.
And what about you, Haley? How would you describe your personal style?
I enjoy fine lines and lots of color blending. I have a more realistic approach, but I also like somewhat of an abstract or kind of psychedelic, more stylized way to make sure that it fits the body appropriately. A lot of my clients are coming to me now for more spiritual pieces, more of their sort of lifetime ideas or achievements or, you know, something that's really sort of powerful to them that ends up being a larger piece that covers a bit more ground. Mm-hmm. You know, some people get their first tattoo and it's a full sleeve planned out these days.
Yeah. I mean, I know that people can walk into some of these shops and literally flip through a book and choose, I want that, I want the three cherries, or I want that rose, or I want this butterfly on me someplace.
Now it's Pinterest. People are coming in with their phones with pictures on Pinterest.
Definitely the age of Pinterest.
But and when I got started, that's exactly what it was. People came in, they flipped through the pages on the wall, and they picked something and got it. I would say that it was probably 90-95% stuff that was on the wall, which is what we call flash in the tattoo industry. Honestly, I can't remember the last time I did a piece that was on the wall now.
Nope.
So these are all coming out of your head and out of consultations with the people that you're working with.
Yeah, yes. I pretty much deal with a client who comes to me with an idea.
What kind of ideas do they come with, and how are they? I mean, are they? I was going to say, are they fleshed out? I guess they are. when they come to you with an idea, what happens between the transmission of that idea and the finished product? Does it always end up being what the idea was, or does it kind of morph?
It definitely morphs. And honestly, the client a lot of times has better ideas than I do. They may have thought of something different that I haven't seen the many years I've been in this industry, and it creates something new. And I love that. I love the client's ideas.
Absolutely, because we're used to doing the same thing. So when you bring in a different idea, it gives us a different look on something.
Mm-hmm. It's a collaborative effort, I know, for me and the client. And they're coming to me with who they are and what they want to represent, and I have to figure out a way to do that in my own way.
What if they're not happy, either because of what you have done or haven't done, or because they see it and it's just, gee, I wish I hadn't done that?
That rarely happens.
Rarely happens?
Yeah.
If you're going to the right artist, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's part of the artist taking the time to really convey to the client what it's going to look like, what they're going to do to it, and showing them.
How do you choose the right artist? What should a person who's never done this before, what should a person do? What kinds of questions should they ask? How do you assess the talent of the artist, their care for you, their understanding of what it is you want?
Portfolios, first and foremost. Absolutely. And fortunately, I know this is Charlotte tattoo culture, and I speak highly of the great tattooers in this town. I've worked in many countries, cities, and we have a tight-knit community that we do not disagree. We all get along. We get together in art shows in town. And if I do not see myself doing that style of tattooing, I will send them to Haley, to Troy, to other shops that I think would do a better job. And it's definitely up to the client to look at a portfolio, to see the style and the direction they want to go. And I have people come to me for color portraits, and I appreciate that they want me to do their tattoo, but I might not be the best fit, so I would send them to Haley. And it's never been about the money. There's too many people that would do a tattoo just to make the money and do a poor job. I would rather lose the money, give it to someone else.
Do you, when somebody comes in and says, I want such and such, and you look at them and do you ever think, that's just the wrong thing for you to do, given your body type, your skin color, where you want it on your body, whatever it may be? Do you ever guide them in another direction?
Absolutely. It's definitely our job to counsel people, because they have sometimes just more nebulous ideas. They're not sure how to flesh it out.
And I would say the number one thing is people want things done too small now.
Uh-huh.
So I always think of it more as, yes.
They want it the size of their phone screen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I see it more of let the client have the idea and then take the artist advice on what's going to work and look good.
You say, Haley, it's important for you to hear from your customers descriptive words that will convey what they're looking for you to design. What kinds of words are helpful to you?
It's important for me to know, are you looking for something that is bold and powerful? Do you want something that's delicate and more intricate? Do you want something that's got a lot of movement to it? Do you want something that just pops? You know, there's a lot of different kinds of styles that I can work with, even though I have my own. You know, how is it going to represent what they're wanting in their piece?
Can you alter what you're doing as you're doing it? In other words, if you think you've heard all the words right, and you're in the middle of this piece, whether it's a small piece or a large piece that's going to take several sessions, and the client looks at you and says, I wish it weren't that red, or weren't that, or I want more lines. Can you alter it?
I would agree.
Yeah. A lot of times with a little bit of background too, you can take a tattoo that is very bold and colorful, and add a little bit more softer, whimsical background to it and change the overall look of it.
Let's talk about training. How did you all start? I know that in your case, Chris, your girlfriend, you expressed an interest and she bought you a kit online.
From a magazine.
Which you say is absolutely not the right way.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that.
Don't do that.
You should not do that. Kids at home do not do that. But
we're glad Chris got to do that.
Yes.
Mattel's tattoo kit in your Christmas stocking.
I'm extremely fortunate the way I started, because definitely a tattoo kit. And long story short, the girlfriend that bought me that kit, I tattooed her in front of the guy that was tattooing me to prove myself, and the next day I quit my graphics job.
So you were already an artist.
I've been an artist since I could hold a pencil. That's been my passion.
And you essentially had to audition for the guy whose shop you wanted to work in.
Yes.
Come in and do one for me in front of me.
I think I just bugged him enough to give me a shot. I would go in and I would hand do all the stencils for him. I would do errands. I would run around. You know, not the super hard apprenticeship that you hear about and that should take place nowadays. Uh-huh. It's a little slack. But, you know, I proved myself in front of him, and he started me off slow.
What about the other two of you? How about you, Troy?
Well, I got my start with a formal apprenticeship in a shop. I was in college. I was working at night in a bar. Bartending, a guy was opening his third tattoo shop in the same shopping center, would come in. I got to know him and started talking with him, showed him some of my artwork from high school, and talked to him about how do you start tattooing, because I didn't know then. It was not as popular as it is now, and worked out an apprenticeship with him.
Haley?
I started out doing henna when I was still a senior in high school.
And henna is that non-permanent tattooing that will eventually fade or wash off?
Correct. It stains the skin. Mm-hmm. And that was a good way for me to start working with art on people's bodies. Mm-hmm. That got me into a tattoo shop. And henna really wasn't very popular then. That was like in 98, 99. And so I just got to spend a lot of time watching the artists and drawing a lot, and just was there long enough that eventually a spot became available for me to do my formal apprenticeship.
What's it like to give your first tattoo? That has to be scary.
Exciting.
Really? Not scary? Because it's not a piece of canvas. It's not a piece of paper. It's skin. It's a living, breathing human being.
That is the most exciting part.
Yeah.
And if you do an apprenticeship, then you've been around it for long enough that you know what's going on. You know what you're doing. By the time you touch the skin, it's that next step. It's exciting. Looking back on it, I probably should have been really scared, but you know, the person survived. So
I did my first tattoo on myself, as far as the first skin ever tattooed.
Oh, wow.
On the top of my foot. Spent about 9 hours on it, which was way too long. However, I still like it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about mentoring, because our first guest in the first segment, Chris Rainier, was Ansel Adams' last assistant, the famous black and white photographer's last assistant, and he was kind of a mentor to Chris. Have you all had mentors, and how important is mentoring the people who are coming up for you to be a mentor?
Absolutely.
Very important.
Very, very important. I can't imagine trying to get into the industry now without having those people that taught me along the way.
Yeah, that relationship is very important too, as you are growing to understand all the many variables that are a part of this art form.
Like what?
Everyone's skin is different, different areas of the body tattooed differently, all the different pigments, all the different needle groupings. Like, it's very complex, and so you need somebody who knows their stuff.
What is the actual ink? What is it?
It's actually not considered an ink. It's considered a pure pigment that's suspended in different things to keep it actually fluid.
Alcohol, glycerin.
Non-allergenic? I mean, are there people who get allergies from this stuff, or are you pretty safe with
it? It's pretty rare.
Very rare.
I hadn't seen one in probably 10 years or so, and it continues to get better. In the early 90s, it was regulated in North Carolina, and by then, dermatologists started getting involved. It's really evolved a lot since the regulation.
Let me share a couple of emails that have come in here from a tattoo artist. We're not all rock stars like they portray us on TV. We have to work to support our families and feed our kids too. So remember this saying, cheap tattoos aren't good, and good tattoos aren't cheap. What does one cost?
Your whole life.
Not enough.
Everyone's different.
Everyone's different.
Lots of time.
Everyone's different.
Most everyone bases it off of an hourly price. If it's a small tattoo that can take a couple of hours, then we can give you a general price on it. If it's something that's going to take more than a couple of hours, generally it goes by the hour.
And Chris emails, I got my first tat at 40. We had a thing going with our listeners, and somebody emailed us yesterday and said, if I hear the word tat or ink, I'll have a different impression of NPR.
That.
I just said it. I got my first tat at 40. It's the bluebird with the daisy on my ankle. I wanted to easily see it because it is to honor my son who died and reminds me of hope when the deep, dark times hit. And you work with women and with a plastic surgeon on women who have had breast surgery because of cancer.
Yes. Yes.
Very fulfilling.
They're getting their nipples reconstructed and realistic to kind of have that final step of them bringing them back to themselves.
This has been very interesting. I wish we had more time, but we don't. Chris Stewart is an artist with Ace Custom Tattoo, and that is in Plaza Midwood area. Haley Lakeman, an artist with Foos Custom Tattoos in Noda, and Troy Johnson, artist and owner of Greenlight Tattoo, which is below South End on South Boulevard. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE.